Good morning. Thank you so much for coming. I am not that old. I am only 40. And just turned 40 in June. So thank you very much. I appreciate that. But I'm going to get out of here. All right. Well, since she stepped all in my presentation, as you know, the Heckler Report was essential in regards to starting the Office of Minority Health. My presentation will just be an overview of the State Office of Minority Health, how we got started. There were some key influential people that helped. I know Mr. Hewitt and some other ones that may not be here. But before I get started, I see some State Office of Minority Health directors. Will you stand? Those are my compadres, and I have to recognize them, okay? So with the Heckler Report, as she said, it spurred conversation and discussion of creating state offices of minority health, which took place in the latter part of the 80s. You know, when you stand up here and your clothes start falling off, it's a problem. All right. So as we begin, the first 5 states that actually implemented the Office of Minority Health was, as she mentioned, Ohio, where that's where Cheryl Boyce was, Michigan, Indiana, Missouri, and South Carolina was the first 5 states that implemented the Office of Minority Health. To my understanding, some states were easier than most to persuade to have the Office of Minority Health. It was just the issue of how to implement it within their infrastructure for each state. So, you know, the purpose of the National Network of Offices of Minority Health was to provide a state-level infrastructure with a capacity plan to develop, organize, and implement local strategies to reduce health disparities. And so over the years, we began to grow in numbers. And so in 93, we began to spread out a little more. Then 99, we began to pop up a little more. And as far as 2006, to present day, most of your states have an Office of Minority Health. It may be called the Office of Minority Health, Office of Equity, Office of Inclusion. It may be a commission. It may be a council. Whatever that office or that minority health entity within your state recognized by the National Office of Minority Health, that is what's considered a state Office of Minority Health. But for the purpose of this presentation, we're going to refer to them as the State Office of Minority Health, or SOMS, as we like to call them. We're also inclusive in our U.S. territories. So I know very active offices of minority health in Guam, in Puerto Rico, in the Virgin Islands. And so there's representation in our U.S. territories. The scope and focus of state office of minority health differs per state. It's pretty much whatever, as the state goes, so does that office of minority health. And so the primary purpose is pretty much focusing on elimination of health disparities. And so how that Office of Minority Health is different, some states have statute offices of minority health within their legislature, so they're covered protection by law. Some states have an executive order for their Office of Minority Health in regards to making sure, and then some states just implemented the office. All right, the importance of the state offices of minority health. I cannot express enough, be the public spokesperson, PA person, whatever you want to call me, the importance of working with your state office of minority health. They have a far lasting reach within the community, within our states, within partnerships, and they are key experts and essential in what's going on as far as health equity around the state. They know the ins and outs. They know who the foot soldiers are that you need to contact. They know specifically how connections, because again, working together works, you know. And so collaboration is key. Our state offices differ. Some state offices only have one person. Some of our state offices have 15 deep. So it's just depending upon the structure and the support of that state and what specifically they're willing to offer. Some state offices are funded by their states. Some state offices of minority health depend solely on grant funding because their state has not implemented or cut out a section of funding for them. Okay, so we differ in regards to how we may be set up, but the general purpose of the State Office of Minority Health remains the same. We are guardian of archives. We define, redefine, we translate. Again, we're essential. A lot of state offices have an epidemiology proponent or a data proponent, whether it be a data researcher, whether it be a minority health epidemiologist, a health disparities epidemiologist. So we're very key in regards to collecting racial and ethnic data, especially within underserved populations. They know who's in your state. So if you're a state such as my state in Indiana, we have the highest Burmese population. And so we can give you intel in regards to what we're seeing and changing throughout. So I'm also the president of the National Association of State Offices of Minority Health. And we're dedicated in protecting and promoting health, wellness of racial and ethnic minority communities. This national association includes all the state offices of minority health. And so we try to stay in contact, we try to work with each other, learn from each other, making sure it's our connection to make sure that we support one another. Everybody needs a little support every now and then, when you agree. And so this is an essential way of how we do that. Presently, we try to have representation of all 10 regions of the United States, and our board is completely full in regards to representation of all 10 regions of the United States. We also have what we call kitchen board members or our advisors, those people that were there because, of course, again, I'm not that old, so I wasn't there at the inception. But we depend heavily upon the people that came before us. You know, those that were in the fight, like Bill Robinson, Cheryl Boyce, Mr. Hewitt, Christine Patterson, a whole bunch of folks we can name, Jerry McCammon, all the people that were there in the beginning that had the uphill battle of trying to implement the state offices of minority health. We depend upon them. And so we seek their guidance in regards to what we need to do, how we need to proceed forward. Of course, we're always faced with challenges. I think one of our main challenges as far as the state offices of minority health is funding and trying to get people to understand the importance of funding minority health. Sometimes entities and states will go outside, they'll get contractors and different things, but they want you to do things for minority health for almost free, right? So it takes money to buy land, it takes money to do anything, it takes money to support infrastructure, it takes those resources. And so it's important that states invest in their state office of minority health or the partners, because a lot of states, in essence, there was a time a couple of years ago where a couple of states were threatened of getting ready to close their offices, but you had an upsurge from the community. When you have community and statewide linkages, such as in government and different things, there are avid supporters, they help you survive, basically, all right? And so even today, you still kind of have to hone in people in regards to the importance of why we're addressing health disparities, why there's a problem in that state, that there is a problem in that state, and it does exist. The importance of utilizing the resources that exist, such as class standards, and implementing them into the structure of the state or the implementation of programs and different things like that, and understanding the importance of having the proper interpreter or translation services, not a Spanish dictionary. Okay, so these are key things that the states offer. I encourage you again, please, 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 I have a list of the state offices of minority health I'll be glad to provide you. The National Office of Minority Health has it posted on their website in regards to who the state contacts are. Each of these men and women work tirelessly and just furiously, whether they're paid well or not paid well, to make sure that they are addressing the needs and the concerns of what's happening in the state. And so they are key essential partners. If you are looking to do programming within the state affecting racial and ethnic minorities, if you are looking to make effective changes, I encourage you to contact your state office of minority health. I encourage you to utilize them, not silo them, not make them an afterthought, but invite them when you're starting at the table. I guarantee they're going to come forward or come through for you in regards to providing an essential services of making sure that we are addressing, because ultimately we want to be put out of business, right? We want to come here 30, 40 years from now and be like, okay, the world is wonderful, everything is roses, flowers, and happy, happy, everybody grab a Coke, and we're all excited. That's what we want to essentially do. But in order to do that, we have to work together. And I encourage you to do the State Office of Minority Health. I know it's been 30 years existence. I know National Office of Minority Health will be celebrating 30 years. Some of our offices that were there from the key inception that had those backdoor meetings and different things to get things started will be celebrating 30 years. So it's an important effort. It's an important thing that we make sure. I probably will say that over and over and over when you ask me questions to involve your State Office of Minority Health. Did I do justice to the State Offices of Minority Health, ladies? Okay, very good. Then I'm done. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So we have time to ask one or two clarifying questions before we move on to the next speaker, and then we'll have a Q&A session at the end of the fourth presentation. But if anybody with one or two questions for Antoinette? No?
I want to do it justice. So, and proponents, as far as racism, let's use social determinants of health as an example. You have institutional racism, those different things that affect, it's kind of the dynamic and the intricate work and part of when you're serving these different communities, historical factors, even present day up to now, that you have to take a sit. First of all, you have to know who you're serving. You have to know what's going on in your community, that state or whatever have you. You have to know the history. And so it's important to realize and respect the fact of those issues. Everybody does not coexist peacefully and live in harmony. We see that in the news day in and day out, every day. But that is, I think, if I was speaking for all State Offices of Minority Health, we have to remember and incorporate that in what we do with our programming. So when we're talking about class standards and making sure that people are culturally linguistically appropriate, making sure that people understand literacy, making sure people understand what they're reading, what you're giving, the program, different things, you can't help anybody if you're going to go to a neighborhood and you're going to give them a pumpkin pie recipe and they eat sweet potato pie. Okay, you're not going to be effective, so you have to remember and be essential in regards to who you're doing. I think that's one of the ways of how we address racism. I think talking about it is essential because there's a lot of people that don't like talking about it and like to keep it quiet, and I don't think we're ever going to get to a point of solving the issue or making it until you come to the reality that it exists. It's here. It may be hidden. It's not even hidden. It's like point blank now. It may be sneaky, but it still exists even today. So when you still have issues in regards to where people aren't being treated equally, then that's going to always be a common denominator in making sure in how you effectively treat people, making sure you incorporate that. Did I see a hand? Yes, ma'am.
Are your offices tied to state offices within each of those states?
For the most part, yes. Not all of them. I think in the U.S. territories, there are some people that have in different entities, but most state offices of minority health are tied to the state. And then there are some, like I said, that you have councils or commissions, so then they may not be directly housed in the state, but they have some type of connection with the state and the efforts that they're doing. Okay, some states are successful in regards to acquiring the grants and different things. I know that HHS just had a grant round where we had a couple of states. All states weren't funded. And so how to leverage dollars and resources is an issue. In regards to when you look at the state dynamics and being realistic, some states do not, they may say they're going to, you'll get a letter of support or ask for a letter of support or commitment, but in regards to leveraging dollars specifically to that office or to those efforts, it's not always a direct flow. So those are some things, if I had to say things that need to change, I think when you specifically put into writing that you must work with your state office of minority health or your minority health entity in order to affect, to use the dollars towards health equity, I think that would make an astounding difference. It would give us support at the office. It would allow us to be involved at the table at the office. And so I encourage that. So I'm not going to say no, we're not part of it, because some states have effective funding, but a lot of people don't. And so that's why I said in the beginning, you know, money, we need it. For lack of a better, we need it. And the states need it. They need support. But not only financial support, they need support from the top, too. So your commissioner, the governor, all those that are in key positions and reports have to support the state office if it's going to be effective. And the challenges that they face, because it's such a high turnaround in government, every time you get a new governor, every time you get a new health commissioner, every time you get a new boss, you have to go through the process again of reestablishing the importance of that state office of minority health. So I would like to see some type of consistency where I don't have to do that every single time it happens, but that's part of the, you know, that's part of life and the ways and challenges of state offices of minority health that we have to do. So, okay, I don't want Anna Meechie to beat me up. So go sit down.
Thank you. Thank you so much.